In part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you here. There are a few things that are sure signs of spring. You got your when you see your first crocus blooming, when you see your first robin, and your first sighting of Sandy Mason. That's also another one of the certain signs of spring, and we're pleased to have her with us once again here this morning after not seeing her for a few months. And from now on, she'll be here every month, always on a Tuesday. It must be the second Tuesday, is that right?
Second Tuesday
of the month, and at 10 o'clock hour, talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Trees, shrubs, ornamentals, flowers, things you can eat. Houseplants, any and all of that is certainly welcome. And as I said before the news, maybe people are already thinking about what they would like to do this spring and in summer, what they would like to plant. Maybe there was some problem that they had last year and they're not really quite sure what to do about it, but they want to head it off before it really gets going. Any and all of those kinds of questions are certainly welcome, and I know Sandy will do her best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Well, it's really nice to have you back.
Good morning.
This is kind of this odd time where you just don't, from one day to the next, you don't know what it's going to be doing.
Yeah,
it could be spring, it could be late winter, it could be, you don't know.
So you have to be ready for that moment when it gets warm enough to go outside and work.
I guess, except now I'm sort of wondering, you don't want to push it. I'm wondering now, when is it? Because as I have been out in my yard and kind of looking around, it does still seem like the soil is a little spongy. So I know you don't want to be walking on it too much, probably. And I also wonder, there have been some places here and there where leaves and stuff like that have accumulated. And part of me says, well, I want to go out there and clean that up. And part of me says, well, because we have, I think, even just in the last few days, actually got temperatures, overnight lows back down below freezing. So I'm thinking, well, does that stuff actually provide a little protection for the shoots of things that are starting to come up? I do have tulips and daffodils and things like that, or maybe a couple inches out of the ground. So I'm not sure exactly what to do.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's not a good time to go ahead and think about doing all that cleaning. I know when it gets warm, everybody wants to get that done. But it really is a good thing just to sort of leave some of those leaves on there for the time being. Now, obviously, if it's really thick, like you have, 6 or 7 inches, 8 inches or more over your tulips, you might want to start pulling that back a little bit. But I wouldn't get real anxious if it's just a few inches because the bulbs and stuff will make it through there. And it does provide them a certain amount of protection, and especially with winds. I mean, we've had some horrendous winds. So sometimes it's not just the cold, it's these March winds that we get that will provide some protection for them. Plus the fact we don't want them to get too excited about getting, springing up through the ground. So you start moving all that stuff away, then the ground warms up, and then it really encourages even more growth. So it's not something we want to do. We just as soon have the soil stay a little cold right now. So
well, I'm glad to hear that.
The next
time I have the impulse to go out and do yard work, I'm going to say, no, Sandy says chill. So, boy, I'm just going to. It's going to stay inside.
There's plenty of other things to do, though.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk about that. We have a couple of callers, and the first is in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
There
we go. Yes, go ahead.
I have 3 Asian pear trees in my yard that I didn't get out there last fall and trim them back. You know how you have to get those runners, those things that come up with no leaves on them? So I was wondering when would be a good time to get out there and trim that back so I'd be sure to have nice-sized fruit this summer.
Actually, you can do that now, really. Okay. Any of the fruit trees, for the most part, you can go ahead and do some pruning. Are you talking about the suckers and water sprouts
suckers.
Like that?
Yeah.
You certainly could go ahead and do that. So that's, as soon as it feels comfortable enough for you, but I definitely do it before the buds start breaking.
Okay, one other quick question. My mailman walks across my front lawn to put the mail in, and he's worn a path in my front lawn grass. And I'm just wondering if the grass comes back, if it's going to be covered over. And the other thing is, how do I get the the mailman from walking across my grass every? That's something I know you.
Yeah,
can't
that's
help
probably with. Another issue.
Yeah.
Maybe you could get him to wear some of those cleat things, so he's like aerating your lawn at the same time. Maybe you could work that out with him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess that you'll find out real quick. I guess because Kentucky bluegrass, you know, starts to really green up fairly quickly. So you'll probably find out. I think what I might do even right now is you might think about just raking that a little bit to try to maybe get some of that flattened stuff kind of off of the plants themselves, so maybe it gives them a better chance. You may want to think, of course, it's going to be hard if he keeps, you know, walking across it. You could think about maybe in April, think about doing a little overseeding, actually just putting a little grass seed over there. But obviously, if they continue to walk over that, that's going to be a little bit more difficult to do. But so maybe you can come to a compromise with your mailman then. Or maybe he can take a different path each time.
Yeah, I just need to be home one day when he's delivering the mail.
Oh, that's the issue, too.
Well, thank you very much.
You need to get some of that yellow tape that says police line.
Yeah, I was thinking.
And stretch that around the boundaries of the...
Yeah, you could plant a shrub right there. Make them go around. I don't know. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Eureka, and this is our next caller, line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
When is the spring flower show on the South Campus?
You know, I knew somebody was going to ask me that because people always do. So I came prepared. It's actually April 17th and 18th. And that's the U of I Hort Club's flower show. That it's just a wonderful event. If people aren't familiar with that, the students do all these different gardens, and you go through the stock pavilion and you get all kinds of ideas on plants. And plus they sell plants as well. So it's kind of a fun time to get into the spring planting frenzy.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. There you go. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I think that's also just right around the average time for the last frost, actually, for us.
Actually, you're right.
It's around sometime between the 15th and the 20-something April. I heard one of our weather guys talking about that.
Yeah, and that's the average. So to realize that's when we get to the 50-50 point, but to realize we certainly can get frosts and, you know, clear up until mid-May, we actually could get frosts, but it gets less and less likely.
So we were talking a little earlier about going out and doing yard work and cleanup and stuff and being slothful. I said, well... That means I can just stay inside. And you said, no, there's a lot of other things that we can do. So at this time of year, particularly if you get the itch to be going out and doing some stuff, we get a nice day, and it's likely that, you know, we could one day it could be snowing, and the next day it could be 50 in the afternoon. So what sort of things do you think people should be thinking about doing right now?
I think probably the big thing is just, we kind of mentioned it earlier, even with the pear tree, is to think about pruning. I mean, for a lot of plants that we have out there, you may want to think about, this is the time to think about rejuvenating. Actually, for some plants, I just whacked down a whole bunch of spirea. So the pink spirea, that summer blooming spirea, I went ahead and just pretty much took it down to the ground. And that's one of those shrubs that actually looks so much better. If you do that every 3 to 5 years, you get newer growth, they actually flower better. You get rid of some of that twiggy, not so attractive stuff. So you may think about doing those kinds of things. Probably the one thing with the shrubs is to think about when they flower. So if you do a lot of really hacking and slashing on shrubs like forsythia or lilac that bloom early in the season, you're going to be cutting off the flower buds. So you kind of have to realize that. You're not going to kill the shrub, more than likely, but you'll lose the flowers for that season. So you may want to think about actually waiting until early flowering things go ahead and bloom, then you might think about doing some pruning on those. So you just kind of have to weigh whether you want to wait or not and whether this is a good time for you to go ahead and get some pruning. Sometimes I've gone ahead and done it on forsythia and stuff just because it was, you know, I knew I had time then and it really wasn't flowering very well anyway. And so I decided to go ahead and prune it back. So that's something. And if people have questions, they certainly can call their local extension office to give them some ideas like, when should I prune this? When shouldn't I prune this? But a good rule of thumb is that if it blooms before mid-June, then that's probably a plant that's blooming on old wood, as in wood that was produced the year before. So if you prune those, you know, early in the season, you're probably going to be cutting off your flowers. If they bloom after mid-June, then more than likely they're actually blooming on new wood. And so you certainly could go ahead and prune those back in the spring and still have flowers for that season. So that's a good thing. And also trees. Certainly, this is, I think everybody should just walk around. I don't care how old your trees are, young, old, whatever. Just walk around and sort of evaluate them. This is when you can see them. There's no leaves on there, so you can really see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to just remove just a couple of limbs here and there, make them a much better plant all the way around. Make sure that you don't have really, you know, poor angles on the branches, ones that might actually break apart in storms. And this is a good time to do that. And actually, I think people should do that every year. Really evaluate your trees, look and see. And a lot of times you can take care of problems very quickly rather than waiting later and having a big problem with them. So pruning is a good thing. So sharpen those saws and get out there.
Okay. Let's talk with somebody here in Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Oh, I can barely hear you.
Oh, good morning.
When you're transplanting a plant from one pot to a larger pot and you add more soil, you press it down or leave it sort of fluffy, the soil you add to it?
You really, you could gently press it down, but you really don't want, you don't want any air pockets. That's probably the only reason why you might press it down, but you really don't want to compact it. And usually once you water, you'll find that the soil kind of sinks a little bit, and then you may find you actually have to add a little bit more soil, but that's probably a better way of finding out, you know, if you need to add more soil or not.
Okay. Is perlite and vermiculite, is that to hold water or to let it run through?
Actually, a couple things. Perlite is really mainly for drainage. It gives you, you know, good, you know, for plants, and especially if you've ever done this before, you'll never do it again, where you've just taken good old garden soil and stuck it in a pot. Mm-hmm. You'll find it turns into a rock, basically. And so soils act much different once they get put in containers, and that's why we add things like the perlite, and that'll help for good drainage. Vermiculite helps with drainage, but it also helps to hold on a certain amount of moisture and nutrients. So vermiculite acts just a little bit different than perlite, but they certainly both will add drainage to the soil.
I see. Are those plant food spikes any good for plants like aloe vera, sansevieria, pothos?
Yeah, the little spike things.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things. They're probably better than nothing, but to realize that fertilizer doesn't move outward very well, and so it's wherever you put it, hopefully you're hoping that there's enough roots right there that the plant can take it up. But what may happen is it may just go ahead and leach out of the pot, and the plant actually doesn't get a whole lot of benefit. So we'd actually like to see the fertilizer throughout the soil rather than just doing the spikes. But again, it's better than nothing, but You may want to think about, actually, some of the things that work out well is a product called Osmocote. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
I think there's other some brand names. I think Once is another brand name. But it's actually these sort of micro-encapsulated fertilizer, and it's a slow-release fertilizer. So you actually can mix it, especially if you're transplanting. You can just mix that in the soil. Works out really well. And then that would just be a slow release. The label will tell you that it lasts 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And then you don't have to worry about fertilizing.
Can you buy that in the supermarket?
Sure.
Sure.
It's getting to be more and more available now, and so I would check out any of your garden centers. And
would you repeat that name again?
It's Osmocote.
Osmocote.
Uh-huh. And I think there's other brand names, but I think Once is another brand name. But just look for slow-release fertilizer. And they look like these little, people have told me they look like little insect eggs or something. They're these little round balls, so
I'll shop around
there. Yeah. I think you'll find that really helpful, especially if you're like me, you tend to forget to fertilize once in a while.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Sandy Mason is here with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she'll be here once a month now into the fall to answer lawn and garden questions about things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Berwyn, and that's on our line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, but it's not about outside. It's about a house plant. I have a geranium that I brought in from outside, and it seems like every time I water it, some of the leaves get yellow around the edge, and I'm trying to figure out if it's my watering pattern or what the heck is doing it.
Hmm. So it's just like the brown on the outside edge a little bit?
Not brown, yellow.
Oh, but then do they go ahead and turn brown, or it just sort of stays yellow?
Yeah, it keeps going. They don't recover.
Okay. Well, I guess it could be a couple of things. Are you keeping it fairly moist in between waterings, or could they be getting a little too dry?
It seems to want to get drier. It seems like it's worse if I keep it fairly moist. I just don't know what.
Oh, really? Okay, because certainly if they dry out a little bit too much in between watering, sometimes you'll get kind of yellowing of the leaves. Have you had a chance to fertilize it? We're getting into the point now where you actually can start fertilizing houseplants.
I really haven't over the winter. I haven't done any fertilizer. It was outside on a hanging pot last year.
Yeah, you might think about doing that as well, especially if it's been in that pot, and we're getting to the point now where you certainly could fertilize. You may find that helps. They do get a few fungal diseases. They get some leaf spot diseases and stuff, which is certainly something that could happen even indoors. But I would think it's probably more of an environmental thing, either too wet, too dry, need some fertilizer, those kind of things, as opposed to some infectious disease. So
yeah, it doesn't seem like a disease, but because I have it fairly close to a window. Maybe it's too cold. I don't know.
Has it done it all winter long?
I noticed it the last month or two only, and it didn't do it outside that I can remember at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, luckily we're getting to the point now where you actually could do some, you know, pruning, shaping, and soon you'll be able to put it outside, so they recover really quickly.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Good
all
luck.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Next is back here in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm new to the area. I haven't spent a spring here. My yard has a large hydrangea the size of a compact car. it's probably 100 years old.
Good visualization.
It has the large white snowballs in midsummer. I don't know when to cut off the dried blooms. And I also have a question about my sweet gum tree.
Well, that one is actually one that you can do pruning on it now. And, we like to leave those big, old flower heads just because they look nice during the wintertime. Yeah, but I would go ahead and prune those off now. You might even think about if it's got a lot of, I would check and make sure there's not a lot of dead limbs or anything in there. And you may want to actually take out some of the older branches. But if other than that, you really don't have to do a whole lot of pruning on those. So it's really kind of up to you. But those bloom on new wood. So
how far below the bloom do I cut down?
I would think about how big it is. If it's really a plant that you're really trying to, really like having a compact car right there, you actually can prune them back quite a bit. So it's really kind of, I would just think about how big you want it to ultimately be.
Okay. And also, I call it a sweet gum tree. I don't know if that's the proper name. It's the one with those hard wooden burr balls.
Sweet gum.
With the wind that's been around lately, I have, 300,000 or 400,000 of the burr balls in my yard. And I don't know if they drop those year-round in next week, are they all going to come out of the tree and raking today would be useless?
Yeah, I think you'll find that most of them are going to start dropping here real quick. And so they're not going to be, dropping them all season long. So you will have this time period here. So I would imagine here real soon they're going to start dropping. So you may or may not want to go ahead and rake now. Maybe you want to wait a few weeks.
So maybe when it starts leafing out, it'll be done dropping the majority of
them. The majority of them, right.
Maybe I'll just rake them out of a driveway.
Yeah, that's the biggest one, especially if you've got sidewalks or driveways. Yeah. You might want to get them out of there. But what fun. Hey, and congratulations on coming here for a spring. You'll enjoy it.
Oh, I think so. I'm excited.
Good.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay,
We have somebody on a cell phone here, car phone, line number one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Hi. Pretty good.
I have a really large asparagus bed. We moved out in the country, and the asparagus bed was established when we moved out there. And it produces quite a bit, but I'm never really quite sure how to start it in the spring. How do you trim it back? I know some people burn back the debris. What do you recommend?
I would say either, if you want to burn, you're in the country, obviously, or just, cut it off. It actually comes out really, this time of year, it's almost rotten to the point where they actually kind of just come right out, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. That's what I've been doing in the past. The thing is, it's about a 40-foot bed, so it's pretty substantial. So manually pruning it is not really fun.
Yeah. Well, and so I'd leave that up to you, whether you decide you want to burn. But you need to get rid of that stuff one way or the other, so as you know.
Yeah. So is now the time of year to do that?
Yeah, I would go ahead and do that. That's fine.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And back to Urbana for another caller. Line three. Hello.
Yes, I heard you mention the flower show April 17th. And if you're in the neighborhood there, you could walk on down to the Krannert Art Museum, where they have florists from throughout the state that have put up bouquets that reflect the paintings, specific paintings. It's all organized by Rick Orr locally, and I think people would really enjoy it. They're open 9 to 5 on Saturday for the public, and Sunday 12 to 5. And I think it's really a beautiful show.
Yeah, I've been to it. Actually, it is. You're absolutely right. So thanks for mentioning that. So that would be a good weekend to spend on campus, the 17th and 18th of April.
Right. Okay. And that'll be the same time as that flower show.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, it's actually Mom's Day weekend. U of I's Mom's Day weekend. And so there are lots of activities going on. So thanks for mentioning that, too.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. We'll keep going. Next caller here is in Pena on line number 2. Hello.
Hello, I have two questions. First, my daughter gave me a beautiful poinsettia in a pot for Christmas, but after Christmas, the leaves all fell off.
Mm-hmm.
It had a beautiful, almost maroon-colored leaves, maybe a new style. But then I watered it, and it has about a half-inch leaves coming out now this last month. I cut off the dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how to preserve it for the summer, maybe setting it out. Also, I'll mention this other one, then I'll hang up. I planted two rows of the black-eyed Susans in my garden.
Oh,
and I left them all winter. I heard that they might reset themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two questions, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. The whole poinsettia, I know there are probably a lot of people out there that still have poinsettias left, and I've actually seen them still blooming. So if you're really wanting to keep them, I guess a couple things. We're finally getting to that point, really, for a lot of plants. We're finally getting enough daylight where you can think about pruning them. So, you know, here real soon, you might think about actually doing some pruning. So they really, because they tend to get kind of lanky and not all that great looking. So you might think about pruning those. And then once we get past frost, usually by mid-May to end of May, you certainly can go ahead and put them outside. And I know a lot of people do that, but just put them out in a shady spot. Don't put them in direct sun, and really kind of grow them on just kind of as a house plant all summer long. And if you're trying to get them to rebloom, then about October 1st, they're actually going to have to have those long nights, short days. And so you're going to have to do something once you bring it in, because they're not frost hardy. You have to bring them in, and either whether you start putting a box over them or start putting them in the closet, but then you have to bring them back out. So it's kind of a, you know, you have to decide whether you want to do that or not, but I've seen people do it, so they get them to rebloom. So you kind of just treat them as a houseplant for the most part. He was talking about the black-eyed Susans. There's a number of black-eyed Susans as part of the problem. Some of them are annual, some of them are perennial. But I've really seen for all of them, they tend to reseed themselves. So it is one of those things that if you've left them, more than likely all the seeds have fallen by now. So you could go ahead and do some cleanup now if you wanted to on those and remove those old stems. But a lot of times they will go ahead and reseed themselves. So that's really kind of fun for those. So.
Okay. Since I'm thinking about it, I want to ask you a pruning kind of question. I know at least in the past I've heard people say you need to be careful when you're pruning, you're doing outside pruning, because if you're pruning one plant and if it should happen to have some disease problem or something, and then you go to another plant, it is possible that you could actually take the disease from the one plant and give it to the other. And I've never actually been real sure how worried I should be, or one should be about that, because some people say, well, actually, you should have a container of bleach.
Yeah.
And every time you make a cut, you should take your pruners and swish it in there before you go, particularly for when you go from one plant to another.
Right. And you're absolutely right. And ideally, it'd be best to actually do it in between each cut.
Every so time
you do a cut. Because you could actually move it from one part of the plant to another. Right. And it's probably particularly important if you know a plant has a disease problem. Say you have apple trees or something that you know have fire blight, which is a bacterial disease, and it can easily be spread on pruners. And so that would be something where you'd want every time you make a cut, because that's one way we control that particular disease is actually actually to remove those stems that are infected, and you want to make sure you get into good wood. Well, if you're pruning the dead stuff or whatever, you're just going to move that bacteria throughout the plant. So you're not doing a very good job of trying to control it that way. So that's a situation where you know it's got a disease problem. And even if you've got maybe a plant that has really got some dead wood on it and you're a little concerned, I'm not sure what's going on here, it might be a disease, I'd start thinking about using either alcohol or bleach. Either one works well, and you might think about doing that in between each cut, but certainly in between each plant. So if you think it has a disease or if you think there's something particularly wrong with it, I definitely do it. Ideally, it'd probably be good to do it all the time, but do we do it? No, not necessarily. So. Mm. And I have found that alcohol works better if you want to like protect your clothing. I did it with bleach one year, and I ended up with these white splotches all over my sweatshirt and my nice denim. They weren't my nice denims, but, you know, you ended up with this really very interesting polka dot arrangement on your clothing. So I decided to go to alcohol after that.
Okay, very good. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she will be with us now every month through the summer and the fall to take your questions on lawn and garden care, always on a Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And next is a caller in Champaign, line one.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have an overgrown shrub in our backyard. It's an evergreen, and I think it's a yew. Anyway, it has develops these pulpy red berries with a single exposed seed in the middle.
Probably is a yew.
All right. And we want to cut it way back. I think that's called renovating. What we looked up seemed to indicate that we should only do about half of it 1 year and then the other half a year or two later.
Yeah, the one thing, there's sort of good news, bad news. Yews are one of those evergreens that you actually can cut fairly deep within them and still have them resprout. We can't do that with junipers and arborvitae. Once you start getting into that brown zone, that's it. You might as well take it out. Yews, I'd never go past a point where you're not seeing at least a little bit of green stuff coming out. But they're going to look funny if you do a lot of pruning. So I think that's why you've seen the recommendation. So, you know, if you're really trying to make them shorter, you know, do a little of it this year, and then that, you know, get the height down just a little bit. That'll help to open it up a little bit. Hopefully get a few more branches, maybe interior, and then the next year you can do a little bit more. But so realize you can really prune those back even when there's just a little bit of green stuff, but they look pretty funny. So I think you probably are on the right method here of just doing a little bit each year.
Spread out. And the book that we were looking at also said to use a pruning sealer. Is that a good idea?
We really don't recommend that. Really don't find it important, to be honest with you.
That's what I sort of remember.
Yeah, we really haven't found that to be terribly effective. And really with yews, it's one of those that you don't have to necessarily use a hedge trimmer and stuff. You can usually just take each branch and sort of follow it back and see where it has some other branches. And sometimes you can do a very good job of bringing it down shorter and still maintain a certain amount of natural appearance to it. So you may try that just with some hand pruners and find that you really can do a pretty good job of making it shorter or smaller.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks. That brings up the point of wound sealers,
because
that's one of those things that people maybe have heard, or their dad did it, or their grandfather did it. Whenever you did pruning, particularly if you say you were pruning on a tree, and maybe you were doing some heavy stuff, and you were cutting off big limbs, and so you got raw exposed surfaces, and the time seemed to be when a lot of people believed, no, you need to cover that over with something, and I think now we're saying no.
It's one of those things I think we thought about that, you know, trees just don't heal the way we do. And I think we thought, you know, you got to put a Band-Aid on it, or, you know, you got to put a little methylate on it. You got a wound there. But trees don't heal the way we do. And so your best bet is do a proper pruning cut. You don't want it flush to the branch, to the trunk, and you don't want to leave a stub there. There's a thing called a branch bark ridge that you want to maintain that, and that's an area where the tree can then kind of grow over that area. It never really heals completely. It sort of grows over where you've cut it, and that's your best bet. Do a good pruning cut. If you don't know what that is, get a book or find out some information from the extension office on how to make a proper cut. That's your best bet. And actually, one of the arborists told me one time is that sometimes it bothers people to see that little whitish area. Yeah. Well, just take a little soil and rub a little soil on it, and then it dirties it up enough that you don't even think about it anymore. It's not so obvious. So.
I think, too, it's really important to make your cut so that when it does rain, water will run off. You don't want to make any sort of, if you can possibly help it, you don't want to leave any surfaces that are going to hold water, because that's not good.
And just what I mentioned before is that doing it early, you know, evaluate your trees on a regular basis, and then you may find you just have to take off a very small limb, whereas if you wait 10, 15 years, suddenly it's this big limb that's suddenly a problem. So if you do it every year, then maybe you can just do some small cuts, and then you won't have to worry about those big cuts trying to heal.
Okay. We have a number of callers here. In fact, the lines are full, so we'll get right back to it. And the next person is in Champaign. Line number two. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have two quick questions. The first one's an outside and the other one's an inside. The outside question is, I rent a house, and we uncovered a brick patio last summer, which we would like to use, but the problem is there's a giant mulberry tree growing right next to it. Mm-hmm. And my question, I like mulberry trees, but I just don't like them raining on me.
Yeah, not good on a brick patio.
And so I'm curious if I'm just curious if I would hurt the tree if I whack the branches that are over the brick patio. It's actually quite an old tree. I mean, it's really tall and bushy. It hangs over the garage, over the neighbor's yard, our yard. And I didn't know how bad that would be for the tree.
Yeah. Well, you make me a little nervous when you say hack. That concerns me just a little bit. I think probably your best bet, it sounds like it's a really large tree, and when you get into large trees, you really need to think about getting a professional arborist.
Okay.
Because none of us really should be climbing trees and pruning limbs, or getting on a ladder and pruning limbs, because we don't climb as well as we used to, and we don't bounce as well as we used to, so don't be climbing trees. So it sounds like you really need a professional arborist to look at it, and you may find they actually can do a pretty good job of removing certain limbs, and really find that maybe it won't be quite the problem that you're obviously concerned about and should be concerned about. So I'd get somebody there to sort of evaluate it and kind of decide from there.
Okay. And my other quick question is, I don't know if you can answer this, maybe you can point me in the right direction, but I collect abandoned houseplants, and someone gave me a houseplant for Christmas, and I've gotten a bunch of books trying to, you know, identify all these plants and figure out, you know, light and water and feeding and stuff. I cannot find this one particular plant in any book, and the best description I have is it's kind of ferny, but what they look like are tortellini pasta on a stem.
Okay, and I'm trying to think what tortellini pasta looks
like. They're like round, little curled leaves that go in a circle, sort of, around the branch. They're
tortellini
not,
is the one that looks sort of like a belly button. It's supposed to look like Venus's navel.
Yeah.
David, only you would know that. that bit of trivia I did not know.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Wow. I think probably what you might do, are you here in Champaign-Urbana?
Yes, I am.
You might check out our extension office.
Okay.
We actually have quite a few books. Or you can check out, I don't know if it's in the library, but it might be, a book called Tropica. It's this giant book, and it has all these really tropical, which is most of the time what our houseplants are, and it has all these, and it usually has, it's got pictures and stuff, and so usually you can do a pretty good job. So check that out, or you can come to our office, and hopefully we can figure it out from there. We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive.
Okay.
And check us out, and we can hopefully help you
is
figure out what it is.
Is any time a good time to drop by there with me?
We're generally there 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, or we are there 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and or you can give me a call ahead of time and make sure that I'm there.
I will bring my Venus belly button plant.
Venus, I can't wait to see this now that David's really piqued my interest on what this looks like.
All right. Well, we'll keep going here. Let's see. Who's next? Champaign line number three.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes. I'm calling to see if our experts here have any experience on whether it's possible for leakage from an in-ground swimming pool, chlorine and so on, other chemicals, to possibly damage landscaping, trees and shrubs in a yard, if that's ever something that they've come across.
Hmm. I would think that that could be very well be a problem. And I've certainly seen it where it's actually, I think it was more of a spill situation, but it's certainly where it's killed grass areas. So is this something that you think has happened in the past? Or
well, okay, well, our situation is we're considering, we're looking at a home that we might potentially buy that's a little bit out of town. And it's currently owned by an estate, and they hired a contractor to upgrade the home to put it in a more sellable condition. And one thing that they have done is that they have removed the previous in-ground swimming pool. We can only assume it was not really well kept, and filled it in, and they're about to replant, regrass the backyard. But I've noticed that there's a large tree in the backyard that doesn't seem to be in the greatest health. And it's dropping limbs that are a little bit larger than you would think a tree should be dropping.
What kind of tree is it, do you know?
You know, I can't tell you that. And it's not a tree that, well, none of them around here are turning green yet. But, you know, we're at a point now where we don't know whether... you know, if that tree has been damaged, I mean, that may not bode well for any future landscaping in the yard. Is there a way we can test for underground chlorine or damage to the soil, anything like that?
Right. Well, you certainly could do soil testing. And you'd have to check with a soil lab. Are you here in town?
Yes.
There are a couple of soil labs, and you can just check the yellow pages. And you might just give them a call and see if they can check for chlorine. I honestly don't know.
Would that be under soil?
Or? Yeah, it's just soil testing, I think,
soil
is what
testing.
It's... Okay, so you might want to check, though. I guess the other thing I would think, too, is that if this is a pool that hasn't been well maintained, probably the amount of chlorine that was in that water or whatever is probably pretty low, is my guess. They probably hadn't been putting chlorine on a regular basis, so I really kind of wonder, because certainly dilution is an important part of all of this, is that really what the concentration might have been. So that would be one concern. But obviously that would be something you might want to check with the soil lab. And,
okay, will do. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you for the call. To next caller in Pontiac on our line 4. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a question about some evergreens that we planted about a year and a half ago. They were new, about 4 foot tall, and we're in a very windy area, and they are they're turned awful brown. Now, is a lay come out of that? We did everything we were supposed to. We watered them good for the whole year, and I just wonder... if the wind has really damaged them.
Now, what kind of evergreens are these?
The white pine.
Oh, white pine, okay. Yeah, white pine, unfortunately, are not very wind tolerant, especially when they're young. And usually what you'll find is that they look kind of funny, maybe for a year, or a little bare on that side. But generally what I've seen is that even though the needles have dropped, they still go ahead and leaf out and go ahead and form needles on that side. But you can check. Actually, you could go out now if you wanted to and just take your thumbnail and sort of scratch a few of those stems that don't seem to have many needles on them, and you'll find out real quick whether those stems are dead or not. You know, if they're dead, they're going to be brown and not have any green there. So you can usually tell right away whether they'll leaf out. But I certainly have seen some that look absolutely horrible, but then they've sort of rebounded then the next year.
Yeah, they don't look the best right now.
Yeah, and especially young ones. And so you may find, depending on how severe, but it sounds like since you've been taking good care of them, I would imagine that's probably something that they'll come out of.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. To next caller, Urbana, and line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning. Sandy, we have a sort of large patch of green, light green moss on the grass in our backyard. It's shaded, and we were told by a representative from one of the companies that handles lawns that... it's probably from acidic soil and no sun. And he recommended that we spread pelletized lime on the grass. And then for seeding it, he recommended that we use turf fescue grass seed. He recommended Prairie Gardens. When we talked with people at Prairie Gardens, they recommended turf-type tall fescues or creeping red fescue. And they said it would blend well with the existing bluegrass. Now, we didn't have an opportunity to do that in the fall to put on the lime and the seed, would it be sufficient to do it now in spring, and when should we do that?
Yeah, actually, I guess I would debate on whether that's really necessary, to be honest with you. I know that's a real common thing that people think if there's moss, that means the soil is acidic, and that's not necessarily true. What's really probably more true is the fact that it's just a shady environment, and the grass isn't growing very well. And so moss just sort of comes in because there's an open spot. Moss is not a very good competitor with vigorously growing grass. So you really kind of have to figure out, why isn't my grass growing? Well, you've hit upon one of them, it's shady. And maybe it's just, you know, if it's 100% shade, you're going to have a really hard time getting any grass to grow. Even shade-tolerant grasses need a few hours of sun, or at least some dappled sun or something. So I will tell you that. So you may want to decide, you know, I'm just going to give up on this altogether, and I'm going to plant ground covers, or I'm going to put in a shade garden, you know, hostas. There's lots of plants that will tolerate that full shade much better than grass.
Like mazus, repans, the steppables?
Yeah, any of those shade tolerant, you know, even if you want to do English ivy and vinca, if you just want to go a ground cover, they do fine. Certainly hostas, ferns. You actually could do a very nice shade garden. Maybe you decide to do that. So I would think about, why isn't my grass growing? And then you might also think about, you know, I don't know what kind of tree this is. Often they're maple trees because they have such a thick shade that the grass just does not grow very well.
Well, we have a row of a combination of maples and oaks. That it's sort of a line of trees.
Well, maples have a really dense shade, so it's always difficult to grow grass under those. I will tell you that. Sometimes you can get a professional arborist in there, and sometimes they can do a certain amount of thinning, kind of opening up the crown if you truly want grass to grow there. So I'd really think, does it get any sun at all? If it doesn't, then I might think of some alternatives to grass. If it does get a little bit of sun, you might think of creeping red fescue. Those would be the ones that we would get. Tall fescue is not particularly shade tolerant, so there's actually two different types of grasses. So I would go with a creeping red fescue, something along those lines.
Would the lime be necessary?
I would not lime it unless you get a soil test. Uh-huh. It's just, as I said, it's not necessarily acidic soil that causes moss. It's more likely just the grass isn't growing well, and it's cool and moist, and, you know, the moss just does much better than the grass does.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank Bye. You. We go next to Champagne and line number two. Hello.
Hi. We just got back from a trip to Ireland, and they had a plant there that was gorgeous. It was called Gorse. G-O-R-S-E.
Gorse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is, David?
I've heard of it.
G-O-R-S-E?
I don't know if I'd know it if I, you know, if it walked up past me.
What does it look like? Does it
looks like an evergreen, and it had little yellow flowers all over it.
It
was really pretty.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is over there is the fact that they can grow a lot of like these heaths and heathers and those kind of relatives that really like well-drained soil. They like that moderate climate. They like acidic soil. So there's lots of things kind of against growing them here. But I'm not familiar with that plant to really tell you, but I'd almost bet it's probably in that same family of needing that really well-drained soil, acidic soil, that kind of thing. So I think you might have a difficult time growing them here unless you really did a lot of, you know, soil preparation, as in building rock beds and those kind of things.
Really pretty. And
yeah,
there,
I've never been there.
Well, it's a really pretty country, and we went off season because it was cheaper. But and there were still lots of things in bloom.
Yeah, well,
it was fun. So, but the gorse was pretty.
Yeah, I have to look that up. I honestly am not familiar with that. So
okay. Thank you
All right,
very
thanks.
Much.
Well, you know, I'm just sitting here and I typed gorse into my web browser, and here I come up, one of the sites I come up with is the Nature Conservancy, which apparently lists them as an invasive species. And,
so we don't
and,
want that
so
plant.
I think maybe we actually don't want that plant.
Yeah, never mind.
I could see if we
Let's
can
Let's hope we can't
it.
Grow it here.
There are some pictures here, and it does show that it has lovely yellow flowers. I don't know if you see, and it has these really pretty
Why?
Yellow flowers.
They do
I could,
look pretty,
but... I could see that someone would think that they were pretty, but I think we already have enough for our problems in this country with invasive.
Yes, we don't want to bring.
I don't think we want. We're going to bring any new ones. And here is another one. It says, gorse is a spiny shrub from the Mediterranean region of Western Europe. Has been introduced to other countries where it competes very successfully with native vegetation.
Ooh.
Gorses become increasingly prevalent on roadsides, newly harvested, and other disturbed sites in south coastal areas. And there's concern that gorse is spreading and could pose a greater threat to forests and other resources. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
We need to be gorseless.
We don't want any gorse.
Sorry.
Here. All right.
We'll just enjoy the picture.
If you like it, you have to go.
We won't
throw
it.
All right. Let's go to Indiana for our next caller here. Line number four. Hello.
Yes, had a new sidewalk put in. My landlady did, and when they were putting it in, they discovered an innumerable number of little roots. So they pulled them up, and after the sidewalk in there was in, there's about a foot, 10, 12, 14 inches of run all the way along the sidewalk on both sides. That's now just dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I approached her about it, and unfortunately, they've raised taxes here, and she's in no position, really, to do anything super landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks like it's up to me, and I'm just wondering if there is such a thing as some grass seed I could get that I could put out there and hope, you know, that it would grow. It won't get a heck of a lot of attention because I'm not around that much.
Right.
But
right.
I was hoping there was something, and mm-hmm. I'm not really too concerned about whether it's going to look like crabgrass or anything like that, because it'll be mowed properly, so it'll be the same
right.
as everything else.
Right, right.
But I was hoping there was something I could purchase.
Well, I guarantee if you don't put anything there, that's what you're going to get is crabgrass, to be honest with you. I think probably if you're looking for kind of a short-term solution, this is certainly not a long-term solution, but it's good for areas where you just want some quick cover or, whatever, is actually annual ryegrass. Annual ryegrass. It's a cheap grass, comes up quickly, but it's not a long-term lawn situation. It tends to start. It's not always annual. It tends to have a little bit wider leaf blade. Tends to be a little more. I guess not quite as green or that blue green that we think of with Kentucky bluegrass. So it doesn't quite look like it.
Wouldn't make
but it's quick.
It's really
It's quick.
Very small area from there to the curb.
Sure,
and
it's
kids in the neighborhood.
Sure.
So
it's a fairly inexpensive grass. Comes up quick. And when you said they're not going to get a lot of
instructions on the bags, wouldn't it? How to do it.
Right, right.
I just remember my young days, my grandfather and I, we just go out and threw grass and, miraculously a few months later. I don't remember what was done in between then, but that's, that's the imagination I'm working on.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you want to go either for something a little bit more long term, you might think of perennial ryegrass. It's another one that will come up fairly quickly. It's a pretty strong seedling and wouldn't take nearly the care maybe of Kentucky bluegrass.
So the annual rye
or the
perennial rye. Okay, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh, good
thanks.
Luck.
Just for those of you keeping it score here, I'm continuing to read about gorse.
Oh, I can't wait to.
And here's a website. This looks like it's the government of British Columbia in Canada, in some kind of forestry site, I guess, and talks about the fact that it has been introduced into the United States. And apparently in North America, according to the site, it said it was first introduced in south coastal Oregon and has spread as far south as San Diego County and north through Washington State and into coastal B.C. And also it says here it's well known for its longevity in New Zealand, where it was introduced by the settlers. It can live up to 30 years, reaching heights up to 7 meters. Since it was introduced in New Zealand in the 1890s, it has now spread to cover more than 3% of the total land area in New Zealand.
All the more reason. Not
Stay
to
away from this.
Yeah. But, it really does show us a good lesson on, we see these beautiful plants, we're traveling, whatever, and we see these beautiful plants and people want to grow them in their own area. And that seems so innocent. As gardeners and stuff, we think it's really quite innocent, but actually it's not. You really have to think, what is that plant?
Mm-hmm.
It's not native. What are the concerns that it might? So I think all of us in this global community that we have to think about those things when we start growing other plants, which is more and more reason to spend time on growing native plants, and then hopefully we don't have those kind of problems.
Right. Okay. To Urbana, this is our next person, line number one. Hello.
Yes. Is there any decent way to get nutsedge out of your lawn?
Actually, I wish I could tell you yes. There are some selective things, but that really aren't available to homeowners, but you may be able to have a turf company actually spray for you if you want to go that route. Unfortunately, you know, they form those little nutlet things, like those little bulbs, and you really, unless you get rid of those, they just keep coming back up. So, you know, if you can, you know, I hate to say this, but if you can dig them up, sometimes you can get rid of, if you get rid of the mother, kind of the mother plants like that, then a lot of times those smaller ones, maybe you could use, a turf company could use an herbicide on, but it's a really difficult problem.
That's how deep just, do you have to go to get?
They're really not as deep as you might think. They're just a couple inches deep, and they're just this little, they call them nutlets, but it just looks like this little, I don't know, like water chestnut looking thing.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have time for other callers. We have maybe about 3-4 minutes left. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Anything in particular you want to tell people about? Anything happening?
Yeah, well, I think the other thing is the whole idea is that you certainly can do some vegetable gardening now. We haven't really touched on vegetable gardening, but there's lots of things you could go ahead and plant now. If you're really dying to get something in the ground, you know, all the leafy crops, lettuce, spinach, all those things can go ahead and be planted. Certainly peas, they sprout a little bit better if you do it indoors, but peas you could go ahead and put out. So there's a lot of things actually quite frost tolerant that you could think about putting out.
Okay.
It's always nice to have a little bit of veggies out there.
Very good. We have somebody else here to talk with, line one in Champaign. Hello.
Yeah, I have a turf question again. We have a backyard that has mostly shade, and I've had various people come out. One guy said there's enough shade that you just can think about planting annual grass year after year, and we have a 5-year-old that traffics it pretty well. Investigated sod, and I'm just wondering, you know, I'm sure the sod would work for the first year, but is it going to end up being just the same kind of muddy mess in another few years?
Yeah, I mean, sod is great in the fact that you get that sort of instant lawn, but unfortunately, we don't have quite the flexibility in what types of grass are in there. So sometimes, and I'm not sure, maybe there are some sod companies that actually will sell you shade-tolerant grasses in sod. Most of what I've seen is just, you know, it's what goes in the sun is also goes in the shade. And so that's probably the problem, is thinking about what grasses might do better. So I have a feeling that over time, the sod may not be have a nice lawn as you're really wanting it to be.
Well, when you say over time, what's that? I mean, are we going to have a decent lawn for 2 years and then it will start deteriorating, or more like a month and a half?
Oh, no. You probably have a halfway decent lawn, I would think, if, you know, if you water and stuff for a couple years. I would think, because it's already the sod's established to the point where it's still growing fairly well. But I think you're going to have, you'll find over time it starts to thin out, is usually what happens. And so you may find that in April or whatever, you do want to do a little overseeding, like with a perennial ryegrass or something like that. But that's probably the biggest problem in shady areas. You're not going to be able to pick the shade tolerant grasses.
Okay.
So yeah, it gets to be hard sometimes.
So for short to medium term, it might do well.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thank you very much. We will have to leave it at that. I'm sorry we have one caller we can't take, but in a month, if you can wait that long, Sandy will be back. And in the meantime, we have a program here on WILL television, a program called Illinois Gardener that airs every Thursday night at 7. Sandy occasionally is a guest on the show. They also have people there from the University of Illinois and from the various garden centers around our area, and they are there to answer questions, and there's also the possibility on that show to call in and ask questions and get some expert advice. So that's every Thursday at 7, Illinois Gardener, and then Sandy now will be here the second Tuesday of the month for every month now through the probably November, December. We'll do it.
And you might even check out your local U of I Extension office, and you can just look under whatever your county name is. That's usually how they're listed. And so a lot of the programs have master gardeners or whatever, so that they can help you out with some questions, too.
Okay.
So.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. The program made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in east central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. And the programming is made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. New introductory classes begin on March 8th. I guess that was yesterday. For more information, you can call 384-5829 or visit their website, www.livingyogacenter.net. net. In the next part of the show, we'll be talking a bit about American history with T.H. Breen, who's an historian at Northwestern. We'll talk about his book, The Marketplace of Revolution, that makes the argument that it was their shared experience as consumers that helped bring the colonists together to throw off the British yoke. More on that in the next hour. First, though, an update on the markets. Stay tuned.